Hi, I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. As always, we begin our program with the latest on peer review, highly qualified scientific literature. This comes from the Cochrane Collaboration, as well as the Birmingham VA Medical Center. And it deals with something that tens of millions of Americans suffer from every day, pain. This particular pain comes from a form of arthritis called osteoarthritis. Millions of people suffer from it. Now, I'm not going to deal with what causes it, which is what we really should put our attention on, but rather how to alleviate the symptoms, get rid of the swelling, get more mobility into the joints. Now, for a long time, those of us in the health field have known that there are two items that really turn off pain in the joints from arthritis: chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine sulfate, generally 500 milligrams of each. You could also throw in some sea cucumber. There are other things, of course, including cayenne, cat's claw. Lots of things turn off inflammation, but these are really the heavyweights, and they're non-toxic. So one of the most prestigious scientific organizations in the world, the Cochrane Collaboration, examined 43 clinical trials. And what they found was, yes, indeed, looking at over 9,110 people in these studies, that you could turn off the pain and do so with improvements in your osteoarthritis without the adverse effects. I think that's very important. Now, of course, with so many people having pain, I will deal briefly with that. Why? Inflammation. What are the primary causes of inflammation? Alcohol, that's a big one, in any amount, including from wines and beer. But also protein. Too much protein causes inflammation, and that's really bad. And you feel that frequently in the feet, in the toes, in the ankles. And also, you have to look at the protein in wheat flour, and which a lot of people are allergic to, but aren't aware of it until they test themselves. Get the gluten out of the diet. Now, there's a simple test that you can take for yourself, and it's fairly accurate. It's called the Coca Pulse Test, named after Dr. Coca, who invented it. And simply is this: you take, without getting out of bed in the morning, that's the key, you take your pulse when you wake up. Let's just say, for argument's sake, it's 75. Okay, you stay in bed. And you have one single item, maybe a partner bring it to you, and if not, just put it on your nice table before you go to bed at night. Let's just say it's bread. So you take a piece of bread in the morning, you put it in your mouth, chew it around, you can swallow it or not, but then you don't get out of bed. You don't exercise, you don't do anything for 20 minutes. 20 minutes later, you take your pulse again. If your pulse is up 5 beats or more per minute, let's say it goes to 80 from 75, make a note of that. You retest yourself again on another day, but there's a high probability you're allergic to what's in the bread. Not a whole lot in the bread, but at least that narrows it down. You could do the same thing with a piece of cheese to see if you're allergic to cheese or dairy. Now, sometimes you'll see physical symptoms, but not always. And for example, when you drink coffee, you're not aware of how it's clashing with the hydrochloric acid in your stomach. And that can cause gastric reflux, meaning the hydrochloric acid in your stomach is now being belched back up into the esophagus, which is very, very vulnerable, sensitive mucous membrane lining. And if you keep doing that, you're going to end up with GERD. And that's why a lot of people have that. In fact, that can in time lead to esophageal cancer, which is a fast rising cancer around the world because people are drinking so much caffeine and coffee. It also is highly anabolic and it acts as a diuretic. Now think of that. It causes a diuretic, will cause a flushing of liquids out of the body and including what's in the intestine. Well, but let's just say you've taken your vitamins with coffee. I'm sure there's some people do that. They're not going to get the same absorption of those vitamins. They're going to get wasted. So always take your supplements with a juice or with a warm, not hot or cold liquid. And always throw them in a blender if you have poor digestion and blend them up. Take them in a smoothie. It'll be easier on your system and they'll get better absorbed. Simple. And also, just stay away from overeating. We're putting too much calories into our body at one time. That causes inflammation. And also, we're sometimes drinking cold liquids with a hot meal. That's not smart. That's not good. And we're miscombining foods. We're taking simple sugars that require no digestion in the stomach, a monosaccharide, with things that take a long time to digest, like animal proteins. In fact, most people are not aware of this. Let's just say you eat a breakfast with bacon and eggs or sausage and eggs, still the same as pork. And if you eat any of these fast food breakfasts, you're getting eggs and bacon, even sausage, even though bacon and sausage are the same. You're getting also sometimes hamburger patty on that. I mean, it's outrageous what they're trying to feed you, thinking, well, we have product differentiations. We're different than our competitors. All unhealthy, all causing disease. And everyone knows this. It's no secret. How long do you think it's going to take for your breakfast to digest? Depending upon how much you ate, depending upon how fast you ate, depending upon how much liquid was in the meal along with the breakfast, like coffee or milk or soda, and how much caffeine is in that, because all these different chemicals are going to hit the hydrochloric acid in your stomach. And that means you're going to slow down digestion. Now, if you have cheese in there, if you eat in a fast food restaurant, they're probably going to put cheese on that meal. Then that slows down everything. That's like going from 70 to 5 miles an hour on a highway. That means that you probably have most of your breakfast in your stomach when you eat lunch. Well, how's that supposed to work? It doesn't work. You end up with dumping syndrome, where the stomach is so full, it then starts to dump partially digested particles of food into the intestine. That's not good. Why? Well, the intestine doesn't do a whole lot of digestion outside of fats coming in, and you have the fat being broken down, and so it can be better absorbed. The more fat you have in a meal, the worse it is for digestion. Then you go through the day having more snacks, frequently sugars, and those sugars, because they don't digest in the stomach, they ferment. That causes bloating and gas. And then that gives you that irritable feeling. Now, come dinner time, depending upon when you eat dinner, you could still have lunch in your stomach. And then after we eat, if we eat a big meal at night, and many people do, and you have a lot of protein in that meal, most people eat their big protein meal at night, lots of fat, then when you go to bed, you still have dinner in your stomach. That's really not good. That interrupts the sleep, awake cycle, and it causes a lot of problems in your intestine. So that's where your inflammation comes from. That's where a lot of arthritis comes from, and we could avoid it. We could prevent it. Just saying. Next up, from Mount Sinai Hospital, skipping breakfast may compromise your immune system. Fasting, not eating breakfast at all, may be detrimental to fighting off infections, and that could lead to an increased risk of heart disease, according to a new study from the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. The research, which focused on mouse models, is among the first to show that skipping meals triggers a response in the brain that negatively affects your immune cells. The result that focus on breakfast were published in Immunity, a peer-reviewed journal, and could lead to a better understanding of how chronic fasting may affect the body long-term. Now, people fast for different reasons. To have a controlled fast from dinner to breakfast, that's smart. That's intermittent fasting. And the scientific literature has hundreds of studies supporting you're going to live a longer life and be healthier if you have a controlled fast, meaning you don't eat anything from dinner until breakfast. But you have to have breakfast. But a lot of people say, no, I'm not hungry. So they'll have coffee. And then that's not good. That's going to adversely affect their blood sugar. And now we see it's adversely affecting their immunity. For a lot of people say, well, I've got to lose weight, so I'm only going to eat one meal a day. Again, not smart. Your body needs nutrients, especially the antioxidants, throughout the day. Your body needs fiber and water throughout the day. But it's not getting it. It's getting too many calories with one meal, because when people eat one meal, they tend to overeat because they're so hungry. And the satiety mechanism isn't working. As a result, they're eating at least 20 to 50% more calories than their body normally would if they broke it down and had breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner. Now, if you want to lose weight, eat a plant-based diet. Because, for example, when I have a smoothie, as I did this morning for my breakfast, I finished my dinner yesterday early. It was 5 o'clock, and I didn't have my breakfast this morning until after 9 o'clock. So I had a good almost 15 hours, more or less, of fasting. That helps the system. I kept fully hydrated. That helps the system. I took the supplements that I knew my immune system and my body needs. That helps. But then when I went to have a smoothie, and I put in different powders that I use for vegetables and fruits. I put in essential fatty acid oils, including olive oil, coconut oil, and flaxseed oil, or hemp oil. I put in some nut butter, a big heaping tablespoon of nut butter, about 2 tablespoons in there. Today it was walnut. Yesterday it was almond. And these come from sprouted raw nuts, the highest quality of nutrient input with enzymes galore. Enzymes are the spark plugs of life. The more enzymes you have, the healthier you're going to be. And where do you get most of your enzymes? You guessed it, fruits and vegetables, then nuts and seeds, because you can eat all those raw and that or sprouted. And that's where a lot of enzymes come from. And I'm also getting the chlorophyll and the fibers, soft digestion fibers. I also make sure I get billions of probiotics, so I throw that in the smoothie as well, and then I'll use a different type of liquid each morning to liquefy it. It might be coconut milk or almond milk. I generally don't use almond milk, though, but rice milk or apple juice, and then that's my smoothie. Now, I don't drink the smoothie all at once. I drink the smoothie over about 2 hours, so therefore, there's no overwhelming of the digestive system. It comes in, and then it's able to be absorbed, so my blood sugar doesn't spike. I don't have that glycemic index up and then down. As a result, it's more even. And when you put nuts and seeds, because of the fat in them, they slow down digestion. Therefore, they don't spike your blood sugar level. Whereas if you have a bagel, or if you have a donut, or if you have sugar-coated syrup, oh, you're going to get a big spike. I mean, a big spike that's dangerous. And then you're going to come down. Now, mid-morning, you're fatigued. You go for the coffee. You get the sugar. You get another spike. And all day long, you're on this roller coaster. You're shortening your life substantially. So now you've had protein, amino acids. You've had from the beans and nuts, whatever is used in the protein, and the protein vegetable. A mix. You've had chlorophyll. You've had a full spectrum of fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, and the good fats in your body, all of which help your immune system. But you haven't had refined sugars, which can depress your immune system. Do you realize that if you have a sugar-coated cereal, which no one should ever have, that sugar in that cereal can help suspend a substantial amount, depending upon how many grams, of your immune system for up to 6 hours? Well, hold on. What if you had sugar several times a day? Then your immune system is not helping you for much of the day. All right? See, these are the things when you study and have a background in nutritional biochemistry and organic chemistry and the immune system. And I'm just writing a major paper on how you can build up your immune system. I'll be presenting it on this program, a part of our classroom on the air. Oh, and by the way, let me just mention quickly that every day I've been doing a classroom on the air. on a lot of different topics. I've done them on how to have your own hydroponic farm, how to freeze dry food, how to grow trees, fruit trees in your backyard, no matter where you live, and have fresh salad greens 12 months a year, even if you live in Canada. So I'm showing you all these things. These are short clips. Also how to exercise and how to hit every muscle group in your body, how to get your body fat down. These are free. And I have hundreds of them up. And you can go to the Gary Noll YouTube and download them. You can go over to Rumble and look at and put in Gary Noll Film Library and download them. And you can go to Odyssey and download them. And they're there to help you, okay? Nothing to buy, just enjoy them. But I found something interesting, and I just want to share this with you before we finish up today. Because a lot of people only watch the health nutrition. You're watching this now, by the way, because I'm video streaming this. Then when I do my radio show, because my Comrex unit in New York is out of sync and we're trying to get a new one brought in, I have to do it by telephone. And so when I go from the camera here to the telephone, so I can take your calls, because today I really want to get your calls and I've got some really important stuff I'm sharing. But I'm getting a lot of calls, a lot of emails, I mean, flooded with emails about, not about health, nutrition, but about what to do with all the problems we're faced with today. And we've got a lot of problems that we're all faced with. And those who have good resources, good support system, they're better able to deal with these crises. But a lot of people don't have that. A lot of people are lonely. A lot of people, it's just them. So I'm doing a whole new series, about 80 different classrooms on the air. These are about an hour long. One might be dealing with insecurity, dealing with fear, dealing with uncertainty, dealing with guilt and shame. I'm dealing with the things that really make a difference, that deal with you at a personal level with meaning and purpose in life. And a lot of people have gotten a lot of good feedback on this. I mean, so try to find my classroom on the air. It's easy to find, all right? And benefit from it. So understand something. We have a lot that we can do to stay healthier longer. But don't skip breakfast ever again and eat a healthy breakfast. No more of this, because it's going to lead to heart disease, according to this study at Mount Sinai. All right? You want a strong immunity, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal, Immunity. And the director of cardiovascular research said, don't skip breakfast, but have a healthy breakfast. Why? Because you want a healthy immune system. Why? Specifically, you're going to see a difference when you have a healthy breakfast in monocytes, monocytes, which are the white blood cells that are made in the bone marrow and travel through the body, where they play many critical roles, from fighting infections to heart disease to cancer. All right? You want a good amount of monocytes. But after 4 hours, monocytes from a fasting group were dramatically affected. They found 90% of these cells disappeared from the bloodstream. And that's not good. And the rest were gone after 8 hours. So all this fasting's hurting monocytes. Okay? You need them. All right? You need to have your blood constantly filled with antioxidants throughout the day, because your body is affected by everything in our environment 24 hours a day. Also, there's a nutrient. It's called glutamine, G-L-U-T-A-M-I-N-E. That means it's amino acid. And this Washington University in St. Louis found that glutamine, which is the most common amino acid found in your muscles, and it plays a key role in protein metabolism and the ability to secrete human growth hormone, which helps metabolize body fat and support new muscle growth. And researchers now have found that a daily L-glutamine dose of 30 grams per day was associated with a significant reduction in the ratio of specific biomarkers for obesity. L-glutamine supplementation promotes a positive nitrogen balance and prevents the loss of muscle. Good information. Finally, a study of intravenous mistletoe extract to treat advanced cancer. Who says? That's nonsense. No, it's not. John Hopkins University School of Medicine says the following, that mistletoe extract has been widely used, we know that, to support cancer therapies and improve quality of life. But there has been a lack of clinical trials and data to support its use. Researchers at Johns Hopkins Kimmel Cancer Center completed what is believed to be the first phase trial of intravenous mistletoe. And that's what they have found. The findings from this study, reported in Cancer Research Communications, said it makes a difference. It improved quality of life and some disease control. Now, mind you, that's just mistletoe extract. What if they used 100,000 milligrams of vitamin C and 5 cc's of glutathione? They're not even into that. They're not aware of that. But for those of us who have seen thousands upon thousands of patients at the Tri-State Healing Center with 22 medical staff who saw it daily, yeah, it works. I'm glad they're finally doing this. Good for them. Now you've done the intravenous mistletoe, then let's see you do intravenous vitamin C for those same advanced cancer patients. Just a suggestion. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break and come back. Oh, and by the way, there's always been this question, which is better, hypnosis, meditation, or prayer to help us with pain management? So researchers compared the immediate effects of hypnosis, mindful meditation, and prayer on pain intensity and tolerance. And the results suggest that a single session of hypnosis and mindful meditation, but not prayer, may be useful in managing acute pain, with hypnosis being a little more useful. Because when you're dealing with pain, sometimes that pain is precipitated by psychological stressors from later in life. So it helps because they can release that energy. I'm going to take a break and be right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I have a question for you. Are you concerned about artificial intelligence, what it can do now, and what it's almost surely going to be done with it in the future by those who control it? These are major industries, including the defense industry and DARPA. Elon Musk is very concerned. He's being interviewed in a very good interview, and I commend Joe Rogan for a very good interview with Elon Musk. It's a short clip. It's only about 4 minutes long. But I'm going to commend Elon Musk on this issue, other issues I disagree with, because he's being honest, and he's telling us he is scared. Mind you, no one is closer to what's going on in artificial intelligence than Elon Musk. He's got a company doing brain implants. But he's saying he's scared. He's also saying that he is fatalistic on this issue. Let's hear what he has to say, then I'd like you to call in and share your points of view about, are you concerned? And if so, why? And what do you believe would be a way of dealing with this? Then from that, we're going to go from there into Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader, I voted for, and Jill Stein and others, knowing they didn't have a chance to win, but they had the right forum. These are wise men and women, some of the best minds we could have. And now you look at their policies, their platforms. Had these been implemented, wow, no war in Ukraine, no war in Yemen, not massive poverty, the cities would have been rehabilitated, de-ghettoized, people wouldn't be hungry, children wouldn't be homeless. Think of all the good. You wouldn't go broke because we'd have universal health care. They'd reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act so the casino capitalists couldn't control our economy and our money. We wouldn't have digital currency. Yeah, all that, because that's what they believed in and that's what they've been living by. Here's Ralph Nader at Harvard, recently at Harvard Law School, talking about what the hell happened to Harvard Law School and what happened to the average lawyer, and why aren't you going out there serving the interests of the public that you were supposed to when you were once idealistic and pure, and now you're running right off to a corporation in Wall Street to help them against the people. When they commit crimes against humanity, you're there to defend them. What has happened? And here's Ralph Nader. He's just as articulate and just as insightful today and just as right today as he was 40 years ago.
So this is the, if you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah, I mean...
So you feel like it's inevitable, like AI, sentient AI is essentially inevitable.
Super sentient AI, yeah.
But I don't have any stake in OpenAI anymore, nor am I on the board, nor do I control it in any way.
The biggest issue I see with so-called AI experts is that they think they know more than they do.
But one thing is for sure, we will not control it. We will not be able to hold a candle to AI.
Hmm. You scare the shit out of me when you talk about AI. Between you and Sam Harris.
Oh,
I didn't
sure.
even consider it until I had a podcast with Sam once.
That's great.
He made me shit my pants. Talking about AI, I realized, like, oh, well, this is a genie that once it's out of the bottle, you're never getting it back in.
That's true.
There was a video that you tweeted about one of those Boston Dynamic robots. And
yeah.
You're like, in the future, it'll be moving so fast you can't see it without a strobe light.
Yeah. You could probably do that right now.
And no one's really paying attention too much other than people like you or people that are really obsessed with technology. All these things are happening and these robots are... And did you see the one where PETA put out a statement that you shouldn't kick robots?
It's probably not wise.
For retribution.
Their memory is very good.
I bet it's really good.
It's really good.
I bet it is.
Yes.
And getting better every day.
It's really good.
Are you honestly, legitimately concerned about this? Is like AI one of your main worries in regards to the future?
Yes. It's less of a worry than it used to be, mostly due to taking more of a fatalistic attitude.
Hmm. So you used to have more hope, and you gave up some of it, and now you don't worry as much about AI. You're like, this is just what it is.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. 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 No. It's. But no. It's not necessarily bad. It's just. It's definitely going to be outside of human control.
Not necessarily bad, right?
Yes. Not. It's not necessarily bad. It's just. It's just outside of human control. Now, the thing that's going to be tricky here is that it's going to be very tempting to use AI as a weapon. It's going to be very tempting. In fact, it will be used as a weapon. So the on-ramp to serious AI, the danger is going to be more humans using it against each other, I think, most likely. That'll be the danger.
This tends to plague smart people. They just can't. They define themselves by their intelligence, and they don't like the idea that a machine could be way smarter than them. So they discount the idea, which is fundamentally flawed. That's the wishful thinking situation. I'm really quite close to. I'm very close to the cutting edge in AI, and it scares the hell out of me. It's capable of vastly more than almost anyone knows. And the rate of improvement is exponential. You can see this in things like AlphaGo, which went from, in the span of maybe 6 to 9 months, it went from being unable to beat even a reasonably good Go player, to then beating the European world champion, who was ranked 600, then beating Lisa Dole, 4-5, who had been world champion for many years, then beating the current world champion, then beating everyone while playing simultaneously. Then there was AlphaZero, which crushed AlphaGo 100-0. And AlphaZero just learned by playing itself, and it can play basically any game that you put the rules in for. If you, whatever rules you give it, just, you literally read the rules, play the game, and be superhuman for any game.
Well, I've said for a long time, I think AI safety is a really big deal. And we should have some regulatory agency that is overseeing AI safety.
A publication to start thinking about the law school, about your careers, about the leverage this law school can have with law schools all over the country, 200 of them. This is about what the feedstock is that's coming out of this law school. what level of morality, what level of ethics, what level of one's own significance. Do they realize that the law's singular purpose is to advance justice in all its manifestations and difficulties? It is not to grease the wheels. For the top 1% that in this world control 50% of the wealth, or the top 10% that control 80% of the wealth, and the top 1/10 of the 1% even more concentrated. And this Peter and his friends here are going to have breakout sessions in the coming weeks for each one of these sections that were discussed. The question is the law school going to respond to this? Is the law school administration going to ignore criticism the way it has over the years, at least in terms of not contending with it publicly in debates? Is Dean Manning going to discuss this publicly with you? He's not here today. It's funny, every time I come here, the law school deans are somewhere else. Are the faculty going to discuss some of this in the courses? What's so sacrosanct about the lesson plan? We have to have empirical infusions here. You have to have normative infusions here. Law severed from morality is an instrument of oppression. Think of the landlord. We had a course at a law school called Landlord-Tenant. We almost never got to the tenant. What, you didn't have Harvard Law School graduates going out representing tenants. There's no money in that. You represented big landlords, big property owners, big deals. And so whole generations of Harvard Law came out without knowing the real stuff about torts and contracts and investor rights and pension rights and civil rights and civil liberties. There were always a few who broke the mold. And hallelujah to them, because they became the great leaders for justice, fighting the death penalty, fighting for women's rights, LGBT rights, all that. There are exceptions, but the exceptions were not bred here. The exceptions were because the way they were raised, or the experience they had before they came to the law school, or some extracurricular activity. They weren't bred in the formal curriculum. So let's look at today. We have a situation where, how many of you know what Harvard Law School's endowment is? What is it? Tell me. What is it?
$32 billion.
No. So the endowment is between $1 and $2 billion. Yeah. Okay, so let's say Harvard Law School's dedicated to justice. You heard Peter talk about the mission statement. I mean, it's right there. As they say, you could hoist Harvard Law School by its own petard, right? That's their mission statement, to have leaders in justice for better society, just to paraphrase it. All right, so why doesn't the endowment, especially how it can leverage itself with very wealthy people, because Harvard Law School gets their calls returned, start public interest law institutions all over the country so that they have positions for you? They want you to be good and be for law reform and access to justice and get the poor having tools of power to defend themselves. Well, where are the jobs? And, you know, there aren't more than about 1,000 public interest law jobs in the entire country, and that's a liberal estimate. Where are the jobs? Why don't they set up with Yale and Michigan and Bolt Hall and others? Why don't they set up a consortium where they build the institutions of the law, which become the leverage to build the institutions of democracy and open it up, tackle the inequalities of wealth and income by tackling inequalities of power, which is fundamental and a predicate to inequalities of wealth and income. Now, you know, this isn't a leap of imagination. Most students will go through Harvard Law School and never look at the endowment. They'll never look at Harvard Law School's responsibility. We say, you know, listen, law schools are academic institutions. You can't involve them in action all the time. You know, it's cognitive dissonance will arise. Well, do you know how much Harvard Law School's done for corporations? International section on taxation, when I was there, you have the foundation, what's the name of it?
Olin Foundation.
Olin Foundation. you have mass of the curriculum is built around corporate law and corporate power and corporate perpetration and corporate defense. You have the great sessions that come here and they embrace the head of Goldman Sachs. They support the national security state. They make sure the law review is irrelevant, however technical and perfect it is in terms of fonts. It's large like that. They make sure that you pay a price if you spend too much time on extracurricular law and justice activities, because you might not get the grades.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We all want to know the truth about what we can reasonably expect from having taken the vaccine or not, and what of all the information we were shared, how much was true and how much was false, and what are the consequences? Because they're still promoting the vaccination. They're still making it mandatory, like in California, every year before a kid can go to school. He's got to get another booster. Well, in 10 years, he would have had 10 boosters. And we know that it's the vaccines that are causing greater death and injury in children than the virus itself. But in Australia, they have a person who stood up and challenged this. And this is one of the members of the Senate. Now, he's extremely articulate, but I want you to please listen to what he has to say, because what he has to say is a truth that you haven't heard any member of our Senate or House or any federal agency tell you. And everything he is telling you is scientifically accurate. And therefore, these are the lessons we have to learn, even though he is in Australia. Isn't it amazing? We have to go to Australia to find a member of the Senate who will tell the truth, who is articulate, who has a scientific background. But here he is. Listen for yourself.
Thank you, Acting Deputy President. Today, of course, is the 2nd of August, and it's been almost well over a year that we've had the vaccine rollout continue. And every day I still hear from people who suffer from injuries from the vaccine or suffer through mandates or some form of discrimination. We've just recently passed about through 10,000 cases of COVID in the last 6 months. Now, I don't know if that's not evidence to say that the vaccines aren't effective, then I don't know what is. However, I'm not here tonight to talk about the ineffectiveness of the vaccine, which didn't stop transmission. I'm here to talk about how unsafe the vaccines are. And I want to explain why, and I want to go through the biochemistry. Most vaccines, so for example, the COVID virus has 29 proteins in it. Normally, if you deattenuated a vaccine, you gave someone a deattenuated vaccine, you would take out the ionized molecule of that virus. So you have got 29 molecules, you'll take out one. And what that does, and the one you will take out, is the ionized molecule. So an ion either has more electrons than protons, or likewise more protons than electrons. Either way, it's a charge. And that's what they call the active ingredient in a vaccine. It's the thing, if you've got two magnets, one with the North Pole and one with the South Pole, goes past each other, it wants to attach. And that's why a vaccine normally is deattenuated, because they take out that ionized molecule so it doesn't go around jumping on everything. But what that does is it allows the antibody to attach to the antigen, end of story. Now, the other thing is, because that molecule is still quite large, it's 28 molecules remaining in a normal deattenuated vaccine, it is too big to cross the endothelium, right? Now, what is the endothelium? It is the small capillary between your muscle tissues and your bloodstream. And in order to cross that capillary, you've got to be small enough in a process called endocytosis in order to cross into the bloodstream, right? Now, what this particular vaccine does is that delivers a lipid nanoparticle. It is a very tiny particle, much smaller by a factor of 1,000 than a normal virus. And what that means is it can travel from the tissue through the endothelium into your bloodstream. Now, we know that that's the way this particular vaccine works, because in the TGA non-clinical evaluation report, if you go to table 4.2, you will see where they have done the distribution of the lipid nanoparticles on the lab rats, literally the lab rats, when they injected this particular vaccine. And I'll just read out some of the body organs that it went through and the concentration increases. I just want to focus for a start on the ovaries. After the first 25 minutes, it was at 0.1. So the concentration levels was milligrams to each gram. So by the end of the first 25 minutes, it was 0.1. By the end of the first day, it was 5.25. And then by the end of the second day, it was 12.26. Now, that has doubled after 2 days. And that's not the only organ. It went into the liver, goes into the heart, the eyes, the brain, the bone marrow, the bladder, the adrenal glands. There's just about half of the vaccine and the lipid nanoparticles go into organs other than the injection site. Now, this is despite the fact that we were told that a normal vaccine goes into your deltoid muscle and that's where it stays. Well, that's not the case with this particular vaccine. And what's particularly scary about this is they knew this in the animal trials, and despite the fact that the concentration was still increasing after 48 hours, you know what they did? They stopped the trial. They stopped the trial. Now, don't you think you would run the trial right through to the point of where the lipid nanoparticles had left the body? But they didn't do that. And not only that, that's just the start of it, because once you start gets inside the cell and start creating the spike protein, that can last for days longer as well. But here's the thing. In the animal trials, they never delivered the spike protein mRNA inside the lipid. They delivered a benign enzyme by the name of luciferase, which is the stuff you see in flies, and that lights up so that they could trace it. But as the TGA non-clinical report says, they never tested the distribution and degradation of the spike protein in any humans or animals in this particular for this particular vaccine before they rolled it out. Now, normally when you get the virus, okay, it comes in through your mucosal system, and then if your hemoglobin A in your mucosal system doesn't actually kill the virus, it'll eventually get into your systemic blood system. Your mucosal system is driven by hemoglobin A. Your systemic blood system is driven by hemoglobin G. Now, once it gets in there, once the virus gets in order to get inside the cell, it needs to rely on the antigen, what they call the ACE receptor, which is the angiotensin converting enzyme, and also the transmembrane serine protease, which is another enzyme. And that has to carry the virus across your cell membrane, because your membrane is there to protect the organelles inside the cell, i.e. your nucleus, your ribosome and your mitochondria in particular, from the external forces. What this particular vaccine does, the lipid is catatonic. So that means it uses transfection, and like you're cooking sausages on the barbecue and you see blobs of fat merge together, that's exactly what happens with transfection. There is no barrier to this particular vaccine with the lipid going into any cell. So not only does it stop inside at the deltoid, it goes all throughout your body and it can go into any cell because of the way they've designed this lipid nanoparticle. Now, once it's actually inside the actual cell, okay, normally, now this is a first, right? So normally, you know, you get a vaccine, you get the antigen, doesn't go anywhere near your cell. Once it goes into your cell, it then goes into the part of your cell called the ribosomes, which translates the mRNA. Now, that ribosome will produce a protein. Now, normally, the spike protein on the virus is not the same as the spike protein in the vaccine. No, what they've done is they've replaced the nucleotide uracil and they've put in a new nucleotide called methyl pseudouridine. Now, that was shown in studies in 2005 to actually evade the immune system and have greater self-amplifying properties. In other words, it creates more proteins. But not only did they modify the mRNA that way, they also added another 70 adenine nucleotides at the end of the mRNA strand. Right, so normally there's about 30 adenine nucleotides at the end of the mRNA strand. Well, they've added another 70. So what does that mean? That the spike protein lasts a lot longer inside your cell, creating a toxic substance or a toxic molecule that, you know, is ionized in an unregulated manner. And by an unregulated manner, what I mean by that is it relies on your immune system to kick in and come in and destroy your cells. Now, a normal vaccine doesn't do any of that. It stays inside your deltoid muscle, doesn't go anywhere because it's too big to travel. So what we've got now is a vaccine that has delivered a protein in an unregulated manner. That's similar to a pathway of cancer, where basically you get the unregulated reproduction of toxic molecules, and then it relies on your own body's immune system to attack your cells, right? So we're requiring, where you've got your own body attacking your own cells, you're now creating a pathway similar to acquired immune deficiency syndrome, which, if it goes wrong, you do not want your own body attacking your own cells. Okay, so your next step after that is effectively your concentration. So when it comes through your mucosal system, if you've got a strong, healthy immune system, the immunoglobulin A in that immune system should stop it from getting into your bloodstream. When it's injected directly into your bloodstream, all you're getting is an IgG response. You are not getting an IgA response. So when they said early on that it was going to stop transmission, that was a blatant lie. And why was it? Because anyone that understands anything about immunology knows that you needed an immunoglobulin A response to kill the actual virus in your mucosal system. Because if you don't kill it in your mucosal system, you can still transmit it, right? So now the paper did show that you got an immunoglobulin G response, and that lasted for up to 35 days in rats, in monkeys. But those monkeys only weighed 10 kilograms, and they gave three times the dose of what they did to humans. So it was a greater dose of about 20 times. So you could argue that 35 divided by 20 days, maybe the immunoglobulin G response might have lasted for 2 days. But the other point is that by doing it this way, and the pathways they are using was that they never tested this before they put it into humans. They never tested for genotoxicity studies, despite the fact that this was the first time they ever put genes inside a body and are synthesised genes. They never did longitudinal testing, they never did carcinogenic testing, and they never tested it for other drugs. So people who take other drugs, especially immunosuppressants,
they never tested it for that. Senator Rennick.
Welcome back. I'd like to hear from you now, but I'm adding one more question to you. What do you believe is happening to our standards in education and then people who are not educated properly? Because there's no penalty. If you get an F, suddenly it's a B. And that's because of the politics of the system. They don't want anyone to feel bad, so you can't lose. So there's no motivation for trying. In fact, they're excluding straight-A students, even those who almost score perfectly on the SAT score test to get in. They're excluding them. Hey, you're too bright, you're not getting in. You're too scholarly, you're not getting in. Because we want other people to have the advantage. Okay, what happens at the end of this? When one day someone who is not well-educated, is not critical thinking, has no discipline, and there's no consequence to this, is your employee. What if they're your pilot on a plane? Now, recently, one of those people who was put in their position because of identity politics crashed big plane, FedEx plane, and the people died. The pilot, he was the chief pilot, and even though his record showed that he had failed repeatedly to get his simulator test correct. So he was given a political appointment when he should have had a technical expertise. This is just one example. There are hundreds of examples, thousands. We're flooding the world with people who do not have the skills because they don't have mastery, they don't have meritocracy, they don't have high quality achievement of whatever their goal is. So when they enter the world, they can give us the best that they can, and it helps solve. What are your thoughts on that? You care. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment.
Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to hear from you now. We've discussed a lot, artificial intelligence, not having our elected leaders do their homework, look for the truth, not aligning with political or financial interest, and therefore abrogating their moral and legal responsibility to do what they were elected to do, serve our interest. That's why I keep advocating for wise women and wise men. There are thousands of them who spent their whole life in service to humanity. You don't see one in office, not one. And that's unfortunate. That says a lot about what we're allowing ourselves to maladapt to. I'd like to hear your thoughts. And call. And Rodney, please let me know when we have someone on, because we'll go to the phones. In the interim, I'll start to share some of my ideas why this is important. By the way, before I go there, our sister station where I've been for 46 years, just think of that, four more years, it's a half a century. And we've raised over $50 million, and unfortunately right now, the whole foundation, all the stations are challenged for raising enough money, and BEI can't even pay its payroll. How long do you think it's going to last before people simply out of necessity to survive have to find other work? And then the foundation comes in and says, well, you know, too bad, we'll pipe in music and we'll take back the station. Well, we're right there now. So please call and become a buddy. The number to call, 212-209-2950. And say you want to become a WBAI buddy. And then they'll have $25, $50, $7,500 a month, whatever you can afford, that'll help them pay these bills. Keep them on the air. Because otherwise, this is very realistic. It's not a scare tactic. Your BAI station will cease to exist as you know it. You won't hear local programming. You certainly wouldn't hear my program, because I'll leave if that's the case. I won't support the Pacifica other stations nor the board. But in any case, let's support BAI. 212-209-2950. Now, here are some issues of what happens when we don't pay attention to the quality of people's skills and using those skills historically. As American workers have always been praised around the world for having the highest quality standards in engineering and the products we make, you could keep them a lifetime. All right? So just think about this for a moment, all right? And see if this makes sense to you. If it makes sense, use it. If not, don't. I'll start with education. We have an enormous degradation and degeneration of our educational system. Teachers have no deep passion for the material taught if they're the wrong teachers. Now, they're good teachers and not so good teachers. But unfortunately, teachers are also bound by the union input and others, and that's why you don't see the charter schools. I've helped charter schools. I've helped three separate charter schools just in the New York area. I was extremely impressed when you have children growing up in poverty, frequently with single parents. They have no advantages. And after they graduate in those charter schools, they are at the top of it. But they're fought. Why? Because it's a different system, no competition. And yet there are teachers galore who are very competent, very good, and who feel that if they say anything, they're going to be fought. Also, it's robotic, like our society. In the past, professors were romantic intellectuals in love with their subject matter and had an inspired passion to transmit to students, and did so. Today's education has become completely utilitarian, left-brain thinking, that does not offer any holistic view of reality. It prepares us for nothing except to be offended by everything. Even comparing the publications of scholars and professors today compared to five decades ago, in the past there were poetic quality even to the most boring scientific textbooks. Learning was entertaining. Many of us had already read many of the great classic novels before entering high school. Today, textbooks are like instruction manuals for putting together a cheap computer desk purchased at IKEA. Then let's look at the cities, because they're also responsible. By the way, we have to say goodbye to our BA audience because they're going to break for the news, but we're going to continue right up to the top of the hour. Call us. You can go to prn.live, prn.live. But before I go forward, let's say hello to Jeremiah from Harlem. Hi, Jeremiah. Good to hear from you.
Pleasure to talk with you, Gary. Yeah, always good to hear you. And I have a question for you regarding these, what Michelle Chistadovsky calls, killer vaccines. It's very strange, as I've looked just in my immediate surroundings, I've seen so many strange injuries and medical issues that people are suddenly having since receiving these injections, including three of my own family members who appear to be severely vaccine injured. And my question is it possible for someone to receive one of these injections without having some detrimental effect on the body?
We don't know. Let's stop there for a moment, then you can add anything on to it. Here's the problem. They lied to us. None of the companies manufacturing the vaccines actually manufacture the vaccines. All this is subcontracted. The standards of quality, the standards of purity, were not in place. As a result, they were animal testing. But because they applied for an emergency use authorization from the FDA said okay. However, there was another front occurring, another battle that people were not aware of, so that no one would have any other product they could bring into the public domain. I'm not talking about selling a product. I'm talking just a former FDA-approved off-label drug like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, monoclonal antibodies, all of which had a long history of being safer than aspirin and extremely effective. And yet they were not just rejected. There was no open hearings, zero. There was no forum in America anywhere, scientific forum, educational forum, or media forum, or government platform where you could go in and say, I'm a scientist of 50 years, I won a Nobel Prize in medicine, I published 500, 600 articles. By the way, this is actually someone I'm referring to. And I say that this was a man-made virus, therefore you cannot have an approach with just a vaccine. You have to understand what the cleaves in this and what it's doing. It has the HIV virus in it. It has genes representing mad cow disease, Christoph-Jacobs disease, and it can impact. It can actually cause dementia. No discussion at all. Instead, there was an out-and-out attack everywhere in the world. That would not have happened had it not been for the fact that they knew that this was a good series of drugs and would help, because then if there's anything else that works, you cannot get an emergency use authorization. So the cost of doing this was to destroy the reputation of anyone who challenged it, and the byproduct was we had at least 90% of the people who could we be alive today who died with side effects that they originally told us were just like 12 side effects. And now there's over 1,000 different side effects, not the same, different ones. And they knew from the beginning myocarditis. They knew from the beginning in studies that we're now getting. And we want to thank a whole group of doctors and scientists who are actively working on deciphering these through a lawsuit where about, I think it was 600,000 documents. They're getting about 75,000 a month, and they're going through them. And now we're finding out they knew from the beginning spontaneous abortions and miscarriages. So they've engaged in a crime against humanity. But will they be found out? No. Why? They gamed the system and they control through the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the USDA, the FDA, the CDC, every single major governmental health agency. They control all of it. They own it. So therefore, you will not be compensated for your injury or death. It won't even be acknowledged. They're just calling it excess death now. There is no such thing as excess death from unknown causes. When someone dies, a coroner goes in and can find this person died of stroke, this person an embolism, this person a heart attack. But that's not what we're told. We're told unknown causes. So these are otherwise healthy people who do not die in the early part of life. That's what we're seeing. And those who took the vaccines are now suffering from dementia at a real big cost. I'm seeing people whose brains have aged almost 30 years in a year. They have a real advanced dementia where they can't remember what they ate for breakfast this morning. They can't remember a conversation they had 10 minutes ago. So we're just now, Jeremiah, seeing some of the side effects. But based upon no two people are going to have the same reaction, And based upon, we don't know how many people got placebos, and we don't know how many people got such low doses that it was inactive when they got it, and we don't know how many people got a vaccine that had not been properly temperature stored. Remember, it was stored 58 degrees below zero. And then by the time they get it, how much of that active ingredient was no longer active. So you have all these disparate interlocking issues that we have no idea what's going to happen, except here's what the coroner, here's what the morticians are saying. And that's a big red flag. In one case where he did 600 embalmings, 75% of those had clogged veins with this self-organizing lipid that came from the vaccine. That was never discussed by anyone. Now it's being discussed by pathologists, and the leading pathologist in America, Dr. Cole. They've gone after his business and his license. They're trying to shut down every single person who has outstanding reputations, and they've succeeded up to this point. Now, because of whistleblowers, now because of the hearings that are going to be held in Washington, the truth will come out, and the people like Fauci and others will be brought before Congress under oath. They can no longer be protected by Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and the Democrats, and they will be grilled on this, and the truth will come out. Then there will be massive, the largest amount of lawsuits in world history will descend upon everyone, including, I hope, those in the media who knew the truth or should have known the truth and chose to lie to the public, which led to many people's death. So that's where we're at this moment. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I personally don't understand how a substance that could produce 1,291 side effects, including COVID, according to Pfizer, could enter your bloodstream and not cause some harm on some level. It seems to me like something that would invariably shorten your life.
Yes, you are right, Jeremiah. But all this is playing out. Why do you think I played that clip today from a really courageous senator in Australia? Because the United Kingdom, Great Britain, Germany, France, Italy, New Zealand, and Australia all use the same American protocol, and therefore they have to stay in allegiance to one another. So this is going to play out over the next 5 years. And I believe that we're going to hit a tipping point where we have so many deaths and so many permanent injuries that the media must report on it or then be sued itself, or it's going to be embarrassed into reporting on it, like the New York Times will be forced to report the truth. And at that point, it's all the Americans are going to lose.
It's going to be pretty awkward reporting, Gary. They're going to say, sorry, that stuff we told you that you need killed you or is killing you. Sorry about that.
You are right. But remember, I have that documentary that came out, just came out, that gives 4 hours and 7 minutes of the very best American medical and scientific minds, seven of them, giving you the protocols that can help clean up the mess in your body and clean it up in such a way that it protects you from those lipids. There's brand new science out, and it can protect you from the self-organizing lipids. It can also deal with much of the spike protein. So a whole new vanguard of orthodox doctors and scientists are now fighting the other vanguard of orthodox pro-establishment capitalist scientists. So this is a brawl that is the most intense and we've ever seen in American history. So stay tuned. Thank you very much. Appreciate you calling.
Thanks for everything, Gary.
We're out of time, everyone. We're going to go now to Utrecht Lead in about 60 seconds. Please stay tuned.